guys, and welcome to episode 213 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I speak with Brian Pyatt, who has kindly agreed to share his story with us. Brian is also an OCD advocate, and we talk about everything he's doing in his advocacy, where we go in depth into his story, his first intrusive thought that he remembers, getting therapy, having a mental health toolkit, opening up to the idea of uncertainty, opening up about his mental health story within the media, his advocacy work, public speaking, words of hope, and much, much more. Now, there is a couple minutes in this episode where the audio quality does go down a bit, but rest assured it does get better after those couple minutes. And if you like what Brian has to say, then he will be speaking at the annual OCD Game Changers event in Denver, Colorado, which is happening at the start of March this year. So head over to theocdgamechangers.com to find out more, to get tickets, and see what other advocates will be speaking there. I will be in attendance too, although I won't be speaking. So I really enjoyed this episode. It was really great to spend time with Brian and get to know him better. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Without further ado, here is Brian. On the podcast today, I have Brian Pyatt, who has kindly agreed to share his story with us. Brian is a producer over at Care 11 News and co-founder of the Refresh Network, a mental health media platform. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you so much. An honor to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And as you know, I like to hear people's OCD stories. So as little or as much information, it'd be good to hear yours.
Yeah, this was like the part of this that I was the most like nervous about. I feel like there's so much stuff to like wrap up into one story, but I wrote down some things and I'll try to kind of hit on some of the highlights. But I going back to being a kid, you know, I can see traces of anxiety and some of this OCD stuff popping up, I think, as early as, you know, my childhood. I remember growing up having a lot of things happening to me where I would feel really scared of like throwing up at school, getting really anxious about things like that. And I remember I was always really nervous and really like consumed by this idea of like fainting or like passing out in public. I remember I would always be like really stressing out about stuff like that. So I think as a kid, I had these things that were starting to kind of, you know, creep their head up a little bit. I would say overall, I had a wonderful childhood. You know, I was, I think for the most part, a pretty happy kid. And, you know, I'd had a wonderful family growing up and still have a wonderful family. And, you know, so it didn't really debilitate me, I don't think, or anything like that when I was younger. I had a big change in my life when I was in middle school. So I grew up in Denver, Colorado, and we moved to Fargo, North Dakota when I was in, it was the summer before I went into sixth grade. And that's, I remember I was sitting in, we were in our new house. We had just moved into this brand new house, and I was sitting standing in the kitchen. My mom was in there. I remember there were some knives on the kitchen table. And I, at that point, this thought popped into my head at that time of, what if I grabbed the knife on the counter, and what if I stabbed my mom? And I remember that thought like popped into my head. And, you know, me and just about to go into sixth grade, obviously had no idea what that was about. And I remember that really like shook me and made me obviously start kind of going down this road mentally of, you know, does this mean that I want to do that? Like, why is that kind of a thought popping in my head? Does that mean that I'm like this awful, terrible human being? And, you know, I look back on my story and I think that was one of the earliest kind of like vivid, like intrusive thoughts popping in, and kind of one of my first like very vivid experiences with an intrusive thought. And I didn't talk about it with anybody. I kind of just, you know, went about, I guess, the rest of my night and kind of went on with my life. You know, it didn't really like take me out too bad, but I remember that really shook me. And so I think that was a pretty pivotal piece in my story. And then fast forward to at school, at a brand new school with, you know, new kids. I just moved there from Colorado, and I was sitting in the lunchroom, still remember it. And I had what I guess now I understand to be a pretty intense panic attack. And I got this huge wave of what I now understand to be depersonalization. So this feeling of being like really detached from my body and like I'm like almost like, you know, kind of like, am I in a dream? Like, is this real? I remember like the noises of the cafeteria happening. And I can honestly say that from that point forward, my mental health has not been the same. Like my whole experience as a human being became very, very wrapped up in like obsessing and worrying, like, am I gonna have that feeling when I step into the day? Like, what is this feeling? I was scared that I had a brain tumor. I thought there was something like terribly wrong with me. We went to the you know, I've talked to my parents a little bit about it since, because I at the time I really didn't talk about it very much, but I had a period where I kind of like refused to go to school and then was really, really like frightened about going back into school. And, you know, they took me into the doctor. The doctor, like, I think did like some tests or kind of checked me out. Like, I think I was complaining about like my heart racing and things like that. And the doctor didn't really detect it as anxiety back then. I remember him looking at me and saying, you know, Brian, you're kind of a mystery to me. I don't really know what exactly is going on with you right now. And so I kind of just internalized it all, still going on with this like really intense feeling of depersonalization. And like, I just really like that feeling for people that have never really experienced it. It's a really hard thing to describe. I still to this day experience it on a very regular basis. And I've kind of, you know, as I've learned to like understand my own OCD story, I've learned that depersonalization and OCD and anxiety can really kind of coexist. It's a pretty common thing, and that's been really eye-opening for me to understand. But it was terrifying as a kid. I lived a lot of my life as a kid, and you know, middle school, junior high school, being like, what is wrong with me? I don't know why I'm feeling like this. And I didn't really have any sense that it was anxiety. And so like fast forward into college, and I health anxiety became a really big thing for me, constantly, you know, checking my body for like lumps and bumps, and oh my gosh, does that mean that I have cancer? I went into, you know, I was convinced for a while that I had a heart condition. I went into the doctor and got like an EKG, you know, performed to see what was going on with my heart. I remember I was feeling like vertigo, dizziness, and went in and like had like my inner ear tested and things like that to try to get some of that stuff to go away. All the while, now looking back on it, realizing I was struggling with a lot of anxiety. Like anxiety was really, really kind of running my life and a big piece of my life, but I didn't have a huge understanding of what it was exactly. And so I eventually went and saw a therapist when I was kind of the later stages of college, as I was also at the same time, a piece of my story is coming out. I'm openly gay, so that's been a big piece in my own journey as well. And at the time of learning to, you know, wanting to come out and kind of work through some of that stuff, I started seeing a therapist, and she really helped me understand a lot of my struggles with anxiety and also my struggles. She kind of like loosely diagnosed me with OCD back then, kind of some of the thoughts that I was having. I was having a lot of things going on around, you know, getting really consumed by watching the news and hearing about somebody committing an awful crime, and then being like, so really like, oh my God, do I want to do that? Would I ever do that? Would I ever kill somebody? Like a lot of these like intrusive thoughts were going on. And so I talked about some of those things with her. So loosely diagnosed with it in college. And then, but I always really just saw it more as anxiety. I really felt like that was the word that always just really resonated for me. And then I live my life, you know, I have had a career in broadcast news and television. I went to college for that. I worked at three different TV stations, and you know, currently working at a TV station in Minneapolis, and was able to actually build a pretty thriving and you know, I've been really blessed with some success in the broadcast journalism world. I work for the NBC station here in Minneapolis, and really went on this amazing journey with that. And it ebbed and flowed. I would say my anxiety kind of went up and down. And then I started experiencing panic attacks on the air here at Care 11, where I was really struggling to get through a lot of the newscasts that I was doing. I would get really short of breath and not be able to get the words out. And then it was some stuff going on for me around relationships that I think is what was really eye-opening for me to really understand what was going on for me from an OCD standpoint. I was getting really caught in dating and being in relationships and going through this cycle of dating and then having a lot of anxiety and about is this person the right person for me? And I'm having anxiety in the relationship. So this anxiety must mean that this person isn't meant to be in my life. This is like the universe telling me that, or my intuition telling me that, like, I'm not meant to be with this person. And so then I would break up with them because I needed to get the anxiety to go away. I literally remember it feeling like I am so anxious right now. I literally don't know how to function in any other area of my life. I felt like it was zapping creativity or motivation to like do my career and go on TV and do all of that stuff. So I was really getting caught in this vicious cycle of leaning into people, getting anxious, pushing them away to relieve the anxiety, but then being really lonely and sad that I've, cut this person out of my life, and then going back to them and just getting really caught in this like really frustrating back and forth cycle. And so that's, I remember coming across the term relationship OCD, and that is what actually prompted me to start kind of exploring my own struggles with OCD. I saw some therapists. I read the Chrissy Hodges book, her book about Puro, and have been kind of on this journey ever since then of understanding how it shows up for me. And I know I'm going on and on and on here, but I a big piece in it. So relationship OCD has been really hard for me. And then another piece of my struggle for sure with OCD and a lot of the work that I've been doing over the last couple of years is centered around sexual attraction. And so I really debated in coming into this podcast about whether I really wanted to talk about this. And I think I've kind of decided that I think it's important for us in this community to be open about this stuff, because I know a lot of the shame and a lot of the isolation that this particular theme of OCD can bring up. But my OCD has latched on to sexual attraction in the sense of, seeing somebody under the age of 18 and getting really, really caught in these really obsessive cycles of, am I finding that person sexually attractive? There is any kind of sexual attraction there. Like, what does that say about me? This must, must mean that I'm a really like awful person. And so that particular theme has been a real struggle for me, and is something that I think I'm really like learning how to open up about a little bit more. But I think there's an interesting kind of dynamic there with especially people in the LGBTQ community who also struggle with OCD, where our sexuality, there's a lot of there's a big journey that's gone on there, of living a lot of your life kind of repressing that piece of yourself and really having a lot of shame just as it is, growing up feeling like, oh my gosh, and I'm gay, I'm attracted to people of the same sex. How do I don't know how to talk about this with people. And so there's a real journey there around sexuality, I think, for people in that community, myself included. And then you add this layer of OCD on top of it, and it's really tough. It's really, really tough. So I want to be open and transparent that that's been a big piece of my story. And then just some of the other ways that, OCD for me continues to show up on a pretty regular basis. A lot of, needing to be 100% factual when I'm like telling a story and getting really anxious if I leave out certain details in a conversation, or if I'm writing something online. Some of that stuff has come up, like really needing to be 100% factual about how I feel about somebody. So if I'm sending somebody a text message, and I say something like, I think you're a great person, kind of pausing. Do I really think that person's a great person? And I can get really wrapped up in, like all of that noise in my head. And then, kind of in the relationship OCD realm, I guess, is like having negative thoughts about somebody else. So like if I am, getting close with somebody and I notice something about them that maybe like I'm not a huge fan of, or that's, I just like notice a certain characteristic about them that I'm not so sure how I feel about, I can get really anxious and get really obsessive about needing to like talk to them about it or like clear the air, and a lot of anxiety around stuff like that. So I think ultimately, like I've described OCD as this thing that just blows everything that I'm experiencing really out of proportion and becomes, kind of takes everything and makes it a much bigger deal than it needs to be. So, those are some of the highlights. I have no idea how that all came across or what that's, what that sounded like, but that's kind of my, I guess, my best attempt to like wrap a lot of my struggles with OCD and into one kind of condensed version.
Yeah, no, thank you for that and for being so open. When did you kind of initially, I guess, have the discussion with your parents about OCD, or even before that, what was going on in your head? Were you quite open from a young age, or was it a conversation you had later?
Yeah, I was not super open when I was young. I wasn't really open when I was a kid. I think my way through a lot of the struggles that I've had with anxiety and OCD has been to internalize it. And I think that's been a big piece that I've been, learning in recent years to work on and to work on, openly letting people in on the struggle. I think people and myself for sure included that struggle with their mental health. I think we get scary good at like appearing like we're all pulled together on the outside, but internally really, really struggling. And I think that makes it really hard to lean into connection and to let other people be there for you and to be vulnerable and all of those types of things. So, after I had that panic attack in middle school, that I talked about with like the depersonalization and all that, I actually just recently had a conversation with my parents where we kind of like went back into it. And it's such a fuzzy period of my life, but they said I kind of started putting up a fuss about it a little bit, or talking about being scared to go to school and things like that for like a little bit. But I think like after I went to the doctor and we kind of got like things checked out, they said that from their vantage point, I appeared to just kind of like bounce back into form and be okay. And I know that like for me internally, that wasn't the reality. I know I've been, it's been a big journey of struggling with this stuff, but I think I really just, I internalized it a ton. And I didn't really allow people like my parents or my friends and things like that to be in on it. And again, that's something that I'm really trying to work on now, because it's, realizing that trying to go this alone is a pretty isolating and lonely journey to be on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And with the, thank you for sharing about your sexuality and the experience of kind of coming out and sharing that aspect of your story as well. Was there, and this is going to be a very put together question, but I guess in my head is like, was there any overlap? Because obviously, dealing with your own sexuality and trying to express that within your family and friends and workplace, etc., and then having this kind of OCD mental health story alongside it, the two arguably very different but very similar struggles they can be. I guess my question is just like, how was that kind of having both of them and working with them, and when to talk about one and not the other, or yeah, if that makes any
Yeah, it's
sense.
hard. Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. I think that's like it's hard. It's a hard thing to really be able to sift it out and figure out like what piece of my story is just, growing up being gay and every person who, is to struggle with their sexuality and, identifies as LGBTQ, like what are the things that we all, kind of tend to struggle with, and what piece of it is, my anxiety that's like layered on top of it. And I think I don't really have like a magical answer there of like what piece of it is attributed to what. I guess I tend to look at my story as it just like is what it is, like it's kind of, I think we each have our own like mental health like cocktail of sorts, right? Like we all have like different things that we've gone through and different maybe diagnoses or particular struggles that we've been on. And for each of us, it's so unique. We each have our own story that comes together and looks completely different. And yet at the same time, there's a lot of really beautiful like similarities, or maybe not, I don't know if beautiful is the right word there, but a lot of incredible similarities that allow us to come together and kind of share in those stories and those experiences together. So I kind of am working in my life on being less fixated on trying to figure out, what piece of my story is attributed to like what thing, and just really trying to open up to like how I'm feeling in the moment and just to embrace that like this is where I'm at on my path. And what I do know is that growing up gay and living a big piece of your life already feeling like there's something about you that's bad or is wrong, I think does really deep damage to somebody, you know, and I think contributes to this like shame cycle that doesn't, you know, doesn't necessarily just go away once you say that you're gay and once you come out. I think that that's certainly a piece in the story. But, you know, I'm 10 years, it's been about 10 years since I started really opening up about my sexuality to friends and family. And I'm still on that path of working on and just embracing who I am. So, yeah, I think mental health within the LGBTQ community is something that there's a lot of, I think, progress to be made there. And my hope is that through like sharing some of my story and pieces of my story that we can let people know that they're not alone. And I think hopefully allow people to, when they're young and they start having some of these like same sex attractions and some of that stuff starts happening, like allow them to like organically express it, you know, in a natural way, as opposed to go down that direction of just shutting it down and kind of, you know, putting that piece of you in a box and not letting the world see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then that hopefully prevents years of potential shame and other things that just compound and make mental health worse.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, well, look, thank you for being open and sharing. So yeah, okay. So what are some of the things you've done, you know, be that therapy, medication, anything else that's helped you kind of get a handle on OCD?
Yeah, so I've seen a number of therapists, and like so many people that struggle with OCD, it took me a while to land with a therapist that truly understood OCD and that was, you know, specialized in it. And so I had done talk therapy for a number of years, and so therapy has been, and then eventually I've now landed with, I've worked with like essentially two or three therapists that are truly specialized in OCD, and that's been incredibly helpful. And I, you know, so I see my therapist on a regular basis, usually like every 3 weeks or so. And then I really look at my mental health as, talk a lot about having a mental health toolkit, and I don't think one thing for me has been the end all be all, or like some sort of a, you know, this isn't something that is, you know, like it's cured by one thing or anything like that. Of course, you know that for sure, but it's a number of things for me. So therapy has been big. Yoga has been a big piece of my journey. I try to practice yoga as regularly as I can, and then that helps me a lot, kind of in like my day-to-day maintenance. Really trying to like move my body every day if I can. Sometimes that's so much like easier said than done. Medication. I have been, you know, I've that was a really interesting piece in my journey. Is, you know, I went. I was on medication. I started that actually in college, and was on it for a number of years. Was on it for a really long time, and then I tapered off of it and went off of it, and that landed me in not the best place. And so I've kind of gone back on it, and that's been a big piece in helping me manage it from a day-to-day basis. I, you know, I know it's such a hot button issue sometimes for people, medication, but I went for a while feeling like medication was going to somehow mean that I'm like cheating on life, or that it was going to zap a piece of my personality and all that. So I went through that whole journey of, you know, do I really want to be on this? And at this point in my life, I'm on Prozac, so I take Prozac every day, and that has been, it's been really helpful for me. I think leaning into connection and realizing that it's not always the easiest thing for me to do to actually get in front of somebody and talk to them and actually connect face to face, but I oftentimes that's what I need the most. And yeah, so I think that for me, it's just realizing that every day there's certain tools that resonate, and having as many of those things kind of in the mix as I can has been really great. And one thing that one of my therapists, working with him was so fundamental for me to look at. I really took away this belief of, you know, not trying to get the anxiety to go away, and not trying to get the OCD to stop, and not trying to get like all the, not trying to get certainty around the thoughts and things like that, and really just opening up to this idea of uncertainty was so big for me. Because I think, you know, I had for sure, I think in like doing yoga and really wanting to treat a lot of this stuff holistically and through meditation and things like that, all those things for me serve a big purpose. But I think for a while I was almost getting like very perfectionistic on like the spiritual route, where I was trying to get all this anxiety to go away, and I was trying to get the anxiety to stop. And working with this therapist really helped me to see it as like we're not trying to make anything stop. You know, we're not trying to make anything go away. It's really about allowing it to be part of the ride. And you know, a lot of the metaphors for me that I've worked are kind of looking at my life as a bus. You know, and I'm in the driver's seat, and I'm letting, you know, I'm letting the emotions, I'm letting the thoughts, I'm letting the sensations in my body, I'm letting all of that stuff really come along for the ride, and not trying to push it away. And so that kind of fundamental shift of allowing what's going on for me internally, whether that's thoughts, emotions, sensations, like whatever it is that day, and kind of letting it be there, and then doing my best to show up for my life in the way that I want to be showing up for my life, as I would say, that's literally at the core of kind of how I approach every day. I wear a bracelet on my wrist actually for 2020, and my year, my words for the new year, I'm big into like having words for the year, are allow and show up. So I that's been kind of really foundational for me.
Yeah, no, thank you. And yeah, it's important to hear those kind of attitudinal shifts of like, yeah, changing from trying to push anxiety away. And I understand why people do it, right? You know, I understand why you did it. I understand definitely why I did it, and still do sometimes. But
Absolutely.
I know that, you know, when I do that, it rarely works out for me. And in fact, when I make space for it and just see it as another emotion in my life, it often dissipates or reduces when I kind of allow it to be there.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And I totally, you know, I can sound like I have this stuff like mastered or whatever, but it's, you know, like you said, I still day to day, it's a reminder to myself that usually if I'm in a place of really struggling and really starting to get, you know, into kind of a dark place, like I can usually, I really have to like bring myself back to like, what am I, you know, what am I trying to fight here? Like, what am I trying to resist? You know, what am I trying to control? What am I trying to figure out? I'm so guilty of that, you know, particularly, I mean, with all kind of different themes of OCD and anxiety that come up for me. But, you know, trying to figure out is this like the right person in my life, whether that's like a romantic relationship or a friend, or, you know, what is this, you know, one of the themes for me lately that I've really been struggling with is kind of feeling like I've been kind of feeling down lately. I've been noticing that a little bit, which can definitely happen in the winters in Minnesota sometimes. And, you know, my mind obviously going to places like, oh my gosh, does this mean that I'm suicidal? And, you know, taking something of feeling down and going to the extreme of this must mean that I, you know, want to hurt myself and that I don't want to live anymore and things like that. And you know, in the midst of when that stuff gets really, really hard, I like I'm just repeatedly having to remind myself, you know, I can't figure that, it's not figure outable. You know, I there's nothing that I'm going to be able to do mentally, as hard as I'm trying to figure out whether or not, you know, in that instance, whether I'm suicidal. You know, I mean, it's kind of it's like I all that I can do is lean into the uncertainty around it. You know, I'm feeling down, I'm gonna allow myself to feel down. There's all these scary thoughts going on about what does this mean, and you know, why am I feeling this way? But there's nothing to figure out so often with this stuff, and it's really just like allowing it to be part of the process, and not try to fight it. You know, that's really been kind of my path through a lot of the struggle that kind of comes along.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And I noticed on your Twitter, and I think it's similar to what we're talking about now, you wrote opening to the present moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I mean, I think ultimately all we really have is right now. You know, we ultimately and everything that every so are so many of the things that I know, if you struggle with anxiety, if you struggle with OCD, if you know, struggle with depression, like whatever it is, like all it's incredible how often I know for myself, like I'm living, I get so caught up in living, you know, what is this? Like it happens to me so often that I am sitting here in the moment with maybe like an intrusive thought, like whatever it is, and it starts to make me feel like, you know, worked up and anxious. And then a lot of times for me, like mentally, it goes to this place of, well, what is this going to mean when, you know, tomorrow I'm supposed to like record this podcast, for instance, or I'm supposed to have dinner with my family and I want to be on, or I want to be like present for that, or I have to go give a speech through some of the advocacy work that I'm doing and things like that. And I'm getting so anxious about like that. And my mind is living 24 hours in the future, and I have to really work on just guiding myself back to like, I'm not in that position. You know, I'm not giving the speech right now. I'm sitting in my living room and I'm having an intrusive thought, and that's where I need to be right now. And it's still hard and it still sucks and it's still really scary to feel it in the present moment, but I think it gives us a little bit of reprieve sometimes, just reminding ourselves like we're here now. All that you have to do is be here in the moment. And you know, we just create so much mental noise of around, you know, what's it going to look like feeling this way 10 steps down the road. And so like meditation is something that I've really worked on. I know there's a lot of different tools for people that I think work to try to really bring yourself back, because as we all know, it's not as easy as just saying, oh, I just want to be in the moment. And it's, you know, it's not that simple. It's, you know, our minds are kind of jumping all over the place. But you know, meditation has been a something that I've really worked on implementing more in my life, like trying to meditate and do that like before I go to bed, for instance, and having like a ritual. That, you know, that was actually one thing that I didn't mention in kind of my mental health toolkit, is getting good sleep is huge. So I've really tried to work on like meditating at night before I go to bed, and making sure that kind of sets me up to get some sleep, because I know when I get sleep deprived, it really snowballs. But yeah, the moment is all we have. And I know that sounds like really out there and kind of woo-woo sometimes to people, but it's so true. And I think a lot of some of the best work and deepest work that we can do on ourselves in our life is just to figure out what that looks like for each one of us, to kind of bring ourselves back to the now, because that's where it all happens.
Absolutely. Okay, so yeah, tell us about well, actually, before we get into your advocacy, one question was, because I know you've been, you know, very vocal with your, in a good way, with your mental health around your sort of day job in the media, because you used to be an anchor, I believe, or presenter. What was it like coming out about your mental health story within? Because I know, like a local celebrity, I guess.
I don't know about
Okay.
that. Yeah, no, that's been a ride. You know, it's been a big piece of. I kind of feel like I have been on this like wave of. It's kind of like been my second coming out story. You know, I came out about my sexuality back when I was in college, and now I've kind of like I've been going through like my own like mental health coming out story here locally. But to give you like a little bit of backstory on that. So I got the job here at Care 11, which is the NBC station here in Minneapolis. I got that back in like 2011, and I was just like so pumped to get the job. I was a morning reporter on our morning show for a number of years, and then I anchored some newscasts throughout the years as well. And then I really got to a point where I mentioned I was struggling really bad with panic attacks. So like towards the end of my time on the air, I was like, I mean, I would go into like literally the studio became this place that was like the scariest place in the world for me. Like I would constantly just be really consumed with this whole idea of, oh my gosh, what if I get in there and I have a panic attack, and that's going to be so scary, and what are people around me going to think, and all of that. So I describe it to people as that there was a lot of anxiety for me going on being in front of the camera. There was also at the same time, I think a sense for me that delivering the news and being a news anchor, like that just didn't resonate for me, kind of just at a deeper level beyond any of the anxiety and things like that. And so I think those two things, me feeling really drained about the work because it didn't feel authentic to me, mixed with anxiety and, you know, a lot of my struggles with OCD. I remember I mean, so many times, you know, being like staring in the camera, reading a story, knowing that that's going out to the public here in the Twin Cities area. And I'm being totally consumed with either being short of breath, whether I'm having a panic attack, or being like questioning, you know, a relationship that I was in and trying to figure that out, and kind of my anxiety trying to latch on, or, you know, around like sexuality and I mean, all that stuff, like just super consuming for me. And I think when you're in that space of really like struggling with all that, and then also trying to like step in front of a camera every day and kind of perform, I started to feel like I was like playing a character every day. It just didn't feel like me. And so I made a decision not to like run away from the anxiety, but to just make like a healthy decision for myself to put my mental health at the forefront to move off the air. And I kind of disappeared for, you know, there were like a lot of viewers that were messaging in and just being like, you know, where are you at? And, you know, so I didn't really say what was going on at the time. And then several months ago now, I opened up and did a story with one of my coworkers who did such a beautiful job interviewing me. And the response here locally in the Twin Cities was absolutely beautiful. I mean, I had so many people reaching out to me and just being so supportive, so many people sharing, their own stories of what they're going through. A lot of people opening up about their own struggles with intrusive thoughts. You know, I shared in the story that aired on at the station when I opened up about like that example of, you know, the knife and my mom when I was younger, and oh my gosh, you know, what does that say about me? That sort of thing. I had so many people reaching out being like, until this point, I didn't really understand like why I've been having these thoughts, and that my story could help in some like small way to let other people know that they're not alone out there has been really rewarding. So I'm kind of still work at Care 11. That's still my full-time job. And then on the side, I've been really stepping into a lot of this advocacy and really trying to use the platform that I have here in the Twin Cities area to talk about mental health and be as open about it as I can, and let people know that they're not alone, really, no matter what it is that they're going through.
Yeah, well, look, I'm so glad, you know, when you came out and talked about your mental health, that you were held by the people, the community, and it was received really well. So that's awesome, and says a lot about the people of the Twin Cities. So yeah, you know, let's talk about your advocacy. You know, that could be about the Refresh Network, it could be about anything else you're doing in advocacy. Yeah, whatever you want to tell us, it'd be good to hear it.
Yeah, I'm really in this. I'm in this pretty cool space of like I said, having a platform here locally already. You know, I'm blessed to have some people that, you know, already like maybe follow me on social media or whatever it is, or watched our, you know, shows that I've been on at Care 11, and now I get to use that as a way to really. I kind of feel like my platform is now intersecting with like what I'm truly passionate about, and the work that I really deeply want to be doing. And so I have a platform called the Refresh Network. I started it actually back in 2016 with a good friend of mine. And we, back then, it wasn't really like mental health focused. It was more, I kind of hit a point where I was feeling really kind of burnt out with just kind of the work that I was doing day in and day out, and felt like I needed to bring some work that just kind of resonated for me a little bit more deeply. And so we would go around and interview people about what they've been through in their life and just some life lessons that they've learned along the way, and kind of really tried to just tell a lot of like human interest stories in that way. And so we did that for a while, it went away. And then kind of during that break of the Refresh Network is when I did a lot of the work on myself of understanding the kind of my own like OCD piece of my story. And so then we've relaunched it with more of a mental health lens now. And so I'm using that platform to go around and do interviews. So videos on YouTube and videos on Facebook and things like that, interviewing people that about their own mental health story. Cause I've always said it's so common, and it's so many people are struggling with it, and just not enough of us are talking about it. And so really trying to put some of that stuff into practice and then bring that to life on like the platform of the Refresh Network. I've been doing a lot of speaking. You know, I ever since I opened up, you know, in the story at Care 11, there's been a lot of opportunities to really go in. You know, we went into a high school and talked. We went into I've gone into some communities and some corporations here locally that have had me in to talk about mental health and my story. And I feel like I'm on this like mental health wave of sorts of just like one, speaking engagement seems to kind of like lead to the next one. And a lot of this is really just learning to get out of my own way and not get too insecure about it and not get scared and, intimidated by stepping in and doing the advocacy. And so I'm doing my best to just keep saying yes to stuff that feels right and feels authentic, which with OCD is really hard to figure out what feels right and what feels authentic, but I maneuver that and kind of manage that as it comes. And I think overall, I kind of have no idea where all of it's headed, and that's okay. But I think as long as I always say every time I talk and every time I do a podcast, whether whatever I'm doing, if it makes one person feel less alone and feel like they can keep putting one foot in front of the other, then it's all worth it. So I think, yeah, if people want to follow along, Refresh Network is on Instagram and Facebook, and I have my own personal like Facebook and Instagram platforms as well, and would love to have people join the community if they want to.
For sure, yeah. I'll put your details and stuff for the website, etc., in the show notes so people can check it out there. Yeah, no worries. So yeah, I mean that's great. It's been great to see your advocacy progress over the last year or so. I've definitely been following and hearing good things about you and your work from other people. So keep that up. General question, just words of hope for people with OCD.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of things that I come back to. I can kind of speak to the things that are really guiding for me that hopefully resonate for people out there. One day at a time. I know we hear that a lot. That can be so cliche, but I really try to approach it that way. Like one, and sometimes it's literally one moment at a time. It's just really allowing myself to be with whatever is going on. Allow whatever you're experiencing to like be part of your process. Try not to push it away and just do your best to keep showing up for your life, like whatever that looks like. We're never as alone as we feel. And I think there's great power in allowing ourselves to be vulnerable, like allowing ourselves to feel messy too. I can't tell you how much I realize that so much of like my progress is almost like in direct proportion to how uncomfortable I'm allowing myself to feel. So like getting comfortable with feeling uncomfortable has been huge. So I truly believe that each of us are like whole and love at the core, and I know that our minds want to create really scary stories. I mean, I have basically every minute of every day, every hour, there's a different something in my mind that's trying to pull me down this direction of there's something really wrong with me, and there's something really defective, and there's something that needs to be figured out. And I think some of mine and all of our greatest work is just getting to a place of realizing that you are enough as you are, and just lean into you and just keep putting one foot in front of the other. I think that's kind of what it all comes down to.
Yeah, no, I like that. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, I haven't heard that quote for a long time, which is get comfortable getting uncomfortable.
Yeah,
So yeah, thank you for reminding me. It's definitely
absolutely.
yeah. Okay, cool. So let's say you can pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old Brian. What would you tell him?
Wow. Have fun. I think I've had to really like remind myself of this even recently doing advocacy work, is I can tend to go down these directions in my mind of really like things need to be I need to be doing big things with my life, and I need to be making change, and I need to be talking about mental health all the time, and that is a big piece of what I want to be doing, and that's a big piece of my life. But have fun, allow yourself to enjoy the ride. And I think also, like, and again, this is really hard to do, I know, with OCD, is to like trust, lean into like trusting. But I do think we all have some sort of a I actually kind of hesitate to say this because I know how hard it is with OCD, but you know, there's been this deep sense for me, I think, all along of wanting to do like this work of advocacy and wanting to do work that really matters and wanting to do work. I've always been like a pretty sensitive person, you know, and I think that I, for a lot of my life, I've always felt like that was like, I'm not supposed to be like that. Like I'm a guy, I'm supposed to be more of a guy's guy or what, you know, you're trying to fit that mold of what society tells me that I'm supposed to be. And I think for a long time and still to this day, I have to really work on it, like just embracing who I am, that I see the world in my way, and I may be a little bit more sensitive, and I may want to be like really in tune to helping other people and like whatever that looks like. But like trust that more. I would tell the younger person, you know, the younger version of myself to like trust more of that and try to keep taking action towards that piece of who I am. And I don't need to be what society is trying to tell me that I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Important words for obviously your younger self, but also others that can relate to that, I think. Yeah, important. Okay, so you've got a billboard in the Twin Cities. What do you want written on that billboard?
What would I want it to say? Other than like my bank account and here's where you can send money. That would be kind of nice. No, I think it would be I got to go back to allow and show up. Allow whatever the heck is going on for you internally, externally, like allow it to be part of the ride. Doesn't mean that you have to like it. Doesn't mean that you have to be a super huge fan of whatever's going on for you, but allow it and do your best to just keep showing up one day at a time. And showing up can look really, really messy and quote unquote not pulled together. But I'd have to go back to that. I feel like those are my two words for 2020, and that'd be pretty sweet if they were on a billboard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And how do you decide those two words for the year?
You know, so last year my word was action. I just had one word for last year. It was like action. Like I'd been talking for so long about like sharing my mental health story and doing some of the advocacy and all that. And I couldn't like hear myself talk about it one more time with, I was just like, I need to start doing the things that I'm talking about doing. So I feel like they kind of have just like organically come up for me, I guess. I don't know that it's like a specific process that I have, but that's, you know, I can't tell you how helpful it's been to, there's a website and I'm not sponsored by them. I'm not saying that, you know, but it's myintent.org, I believe is what it is. And you can buy these like little bracelets and put your word on it. And I've done
Oh,
that for the
cool.
last 2 years. And it's just like a really good reminder of, you know, I can be feeling super anxious in the moment and just looking down at that is just always such a good like visual and kind of tangible reminder.
Yeah, absolutely. They could make sort of good ERP based bracelets as well.
Yeah, totally. You're onto something there for sure.
Cool. See if I can strike up a sponsorship deal before I put this
Yeah,
episode
right.
live. Cool. No, thank you for that. And is there anything that you wish you could have said that I haven't asked you today?
Don't think so. I think you did a beautiful job. I'm sure I will think of something the second that I hang up with you, but no, I hope I you know, kind of got across as much as my story as I could, and just if there's ever anything I can do to help support people out there, I'm here, and hopefully can just keep letting everybody know out there that you're not alone, and keep taking it one day at a time.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. And yeah, thank you for all the work you do. And I'm excited to see how, well, what you do and how it progresses. So there you have it. Thank you for your time. And thank you to Brian also. And if you want to hear him speak and you can get to Denver at the start of March, then head over to theocdgamechangers.com to find out more about Brian and the other advocates that will be speaking there. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.